Blog Talk Radio.
That's right, everybody. You know who it is. Coach Mike Jones on the coach with the most. Coming at you hard from coast to coast. I don't want to boast, but now I got to roast you in my social media posts. You double dose or diagnose. You feeling tired, life expired, now you're a ghost. I'll be your host, so won't you raise a toast to the coach with the most, Coach Mike Jones.
Welcome to another edition of the Coach Mike Jones Show podcast, episode 52, with the one and only gorgeous Michelle Starr. How you doing, brother?
Good, man. How are you?
We're doing good, and I'm here with my co-host today, Fine Guy. He's so fly. He's going to take you to the sky. He's going to make you high. I don't have to lie, brother, because he might be better than baseball, hot dogs, and apple pie. Sign Guy, how you doing, brother?
Doing very well today, coach and gorgeous one.
That's good
all
to
right.
hear.
All right, Sign, get us right into it.
Well, gorgeous Michelle Starr, we're going to kick you off with coach's routine first-timer question. How did you get your start in this crazy business of professional wrestling?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know if I can remember back that far, Sign Guy. I mean, I've been involved in professional wrestling since I was I'm not involved anymore, but I was involved since I was like 14, 15 years old. I was started out with a wrestling newsletter in California called California Wrestling. I used to correspond with Mike Rogers, the Ring Around the Northwest, Neil Drummond, we had Pacific Coast Wrestling News, and, of course, Dave Meltzer, the Wrestling Observer, Bob Kloss, and Matt Results. I was a big fan back then. I used to cover the California independent scene. I'd go to all the indie shows, the lucha shows, anything I was available to get to when I was 16 years old, actually. I'd drive to. Before I could drive, my grandfather would take me to these shows, and I'd go and cover them. And it was quite the journey, being a kid in high school, just getting involved in professional wrestling from, writing the newsletter kind of was my way in, my ticket in to the back door. You know, everybody else had to buy a ticket, but I thought, maybe I'll write this newsletter and report on what's going on here since nobody was, and then maybe I could get more access to the shows, and it did. And it's a great way to get my foot in the door and meet the local wrestlers and then eventually get trained. I was trained in 1987 in a place called Gil's Garage in East L.A. It was the same place that the luchadors trained. Gil was Gil Arellano. He was known as Falcon de Oro. And Billy Anderson trained there two, three days a week. He'd rent the ring, and we would train there. And in that location was a pretty dirty, disgusting type. Like it was an automotive repair shop that had a bay that was used for a wrestling ring. The lucha guys would all train there. It was in East L.A. It was in Whittier, California. So it was quite sketchy getting there and getting out of there. And yeah, that's where it all started, was in East L.A., in a lucha ring.
My goodness, what a journey. And my goodness, man, wrestling has really benefited from you being involved. And what a trek you've laid there. And, man, what a career you've had.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate that. You know, I tried my best. You know, not everything worked out the best for me or best for everybody. I put in a lot of time, you know, not only wrestling for people, but also running a lot of shows and making opportunities for many people who needed to showcase themselves on a semi-regular, or, you know, we're trying to be active and run and keep guys working and I want to work around. And I had a lot of friends, you know, in the Northwest who helped me in the business too and helped me learn. You know, I learned from guys like Moondog Reddy and Billy Two Eagles and Matt Bourne and Buddy Rose and Colonel the Beers. I had the pleasure of, you know, bending their ear and asking them things and working in the ring with those guys to become a better worker. And, you know, I mean, it's you can only learn so much at a wrestling school. You mean, it's like on-the-job training. You kind of learn as you go and learn more as you go. And the more people you to wrestle, the more people you wrestle who are better than you, the more you'll learn. And so what I try to tell people is you got to always wrestle something that's better than you and to try to get better yourself, right? If you only wrestle at your same level or below your level, you're never going to get better. And that's why a lot of guys in the who I've trained or I've moved on, you know, they relocate, they move on and keep learning and go to other wrestling schools, go to other classes, other sessions, you know, and go to other places to wrestle and wrestle against other guys. The opportunity is what makes you a better wrestler for sure.
My goodness, and you've been all over the world, including my favorite country, South Korea. tell us a little bit about where you've been in the world.
Well, yeah, I love South Korea. I mean, South Korea was a dream come true getting to go there. It was kind of a weird situation. It's because I had there was a show coming up that I can't remember what year it was, maybe 2001. And Lou Thesz is on the show. He was actually the guy presenting the New World title in South Korea. And One Man Gang was supposed to be in the main event there. And One Man Gang canceled the tour at the last minute. And we were on the road. We were in Trail, British Columbia. We were heading the trail. That night we ended up having 700 people in Trail, which is amazing. The show needed the main event guy. Because they messaged me and they asked Rick Patterson was said he wanted to get myself and Kurgan if we could get to South Korea the next day. So I thought, well, this
wow.
is an opportunity. I know this is going to be like one day's notice to get to South Korea.
Jeez.
I know it's my main event, my own, but I may never get this opportunity again. So they flew us business class. We got on a flight. Went to Kelowna, flew from there to Vancouver, then Vancouver to Seoul, and then it was crazy. Last minute deal, we went in, there were no visa the first time, and which was still pretty easy to get in, and got to meet Lou Thesz. He was there, you know, obviously Kurgan and you know Lee Wong Pyo, the Super Dragon. He was the main guy there, and then also the most legendary Korean wrestler of all time, Kim Il. Camille was there. He was the older gentleman. He was past this. He wasn't wrestling anymore, but he was like the honorary guest at these events, right? So it was quite the experience. And then from then on, I got to go back there four more times to South Korea after that.
So it
did pay off. And, you know, we quite the experience, you know, getting to wrestle in Seoul and then getting to wrestle in Busan and the other small communities we went to throughout South Korea there. Got to wrestle at the amusement park one time. It was a show at the amusement park, and most of the shows there in South Korea were bigger shows, a big crowd, and big buildings, which is quite amazing, you know. And then from there, you know, I got to go to Japan after that. Like Korea spurred Japan to me, and I got to do 10 tours of Japan
wow.
for IWA Japan.
Dang.
So it turned out to be a good times for sure, you know. You know, it's just a matter
yeah.
of being in the right place at the right time and having the right opportunity because you never know. Like, I wasn't actively trying to get booked over there, and I was just, you know, they needed Kurgan, and they said, well, if you let us have Kurgan, you could come too, that thing, right? So, okay.
Wow.
And then, and then I just ended up getting my own tours after that, right? So, you know, to South Korea. So and I brought guys like Juggernaut there. Juggernaut got to go to Korea and Japan, you know, and Kurgan went there a bunch of times. And of course, Rick Letterface was already there, and he was the end there. Letterface was the end there, and Jason the Terrible, which is not the Canadian one, but the Rafi Rodriguez, the one from Puerto Rico, right? He was the was the actual booker there, right? So, yeah.
Okay, right on. And yes, one of my goals in lifetime dreams is to bring wrestling back to Korea, which of course Minho Kim has started it back up over there. But I'm looking to bring wrestling over there, and hopefully you and maybe Kenny Lesh too. That's a goal of mine.
That would be awesome to come over to Korea. Yes, I noticed that Korean wrestling has started back up again with the gentleman you mentioned there. It doesn't look the same as it was before, I don't think. I think it's more on a smaller scale, right? I mean, for what I've seen so far on online, right? But
yeah.
I think there's another Korean promotion there too, right, that has smaller shows too. I'm not sure what they're called, but seen a little bit on that. But yeah, that new one has started. I got the WWA World Wrestling Association, or Minho Kim there has started back up, which is good. So hopefully it brings opportunity for everybody.
Yeah, and man, it's been an honor. What's that?
Aren't you married? Are you married to a Korean woman, or?
Yes, I've been with a Korean woman for almost, we're going on 20 years now, and I've been to Korea many times.
Wow.
I love it. Our dream is to retire over there, you know. And
yeah, I love Seoul.
You know?
Seoul's a nice place, and I love Itaewon. Was it good?
Nice.
Yeah.
Yes. And then, yes, I've been honored to share your journey where I've got you in the NGW Green Room from the Cauliflower Alley Club, and I've got
to share
the ring with you. Got to share the ring with you in the main event at Tito Carrion's gym. And of course, I got the kiss of Michelle Starr, my goodness.
Oh, my gosh. I don't even remember that day, but I know you remember, but I don't. But, wow, that was a lot. What year was that, Coach? When was that?
That was like 1999, I think it was, and it is on YouTube currently.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Very good.
Right
awesome.
On.
Okay.
Now, Coach,
were you actually like a teacher somewhere before? Is that where you came from? Is that how it was? Or?
Yes, I've coached all my life. I've started coaching at age 13, baseball for my brother's team. And then of course, it just went on from there, wrestling, baseball, football, soccer, basketball, you name it. And then being involved with the Boys and Girls Clubs, and I had my own arena where I got to wrestle with the South End Boys and Girls Clubs as much as we wanted. And I was already a coach there. It was a lifelong dream because I had played there. I had coached there. My son played there. I coached my son there. Now I'm wrestling there. It was like, it's been a great journey myself. I appreciate everything. But anyway, back to the interview, let the people know who some of your heroes were in your life, like, for starters, in ordinary life.
In ordinary life, my heroes are baseball heroes. You know, I was the 1981 Dodgers infield. Actually, they started in the 74, but from 74 on, you know, Ron Say at third base, Bill Russell at shortstop, Davey Lopes at second base, and Steve Garvey at first. You know, the catcher was Steve Yeager. You know, the outfield was Dusty Baker, Reggie Smith, and I'm losing my track one more. But, you know, it was an amazing time for me. I was, as a kid, growing up in Southern California, I used to go to lots of Dodger games with my grandfather and my father. And, you know, as a kid, and I grew up in the 70s, in L.A. there, and I the Dodgers were my inspiration. I always wanted to be a baseball player, and I lived and breathed a Dodger blue. And actually, you know, now I'm the same thing. I'm back in the baseball since I've left wrestling. I'm really back in the baseball, following baseball, traveling all over to different stadiums, trying to knock off all those stadiums off my bucket list. I try to go when the Dodgers are at these different stadiums. Sometimes it doesn't always work out. And, you know, I went to spring training this year. But and I follow the Mariners too. As for wrestling, you know, my wrestling idols back in the day were, I started following wrestling in the 80s. So, I mean, I guess it was Bob Backlund was the champion then. He was my, I looked up to Bob Backlund. I always wanted to be like Bob Backlund, which is, you know, the point, he was a playing guy, but like his matches were so good and so intense for that time period. I saw him wrestle Sergeant Slaughter at the LA Sports Arena. which is really impressive. And I saw him defend his belt against other people there, like Ivan Koloff and different people in that time period. And so Backlund was cool. Slaughter was cool. Besides that, who else did I look up to back then? I don't know. I'd have to think about it. Besides the baseball players and wrestlers, yeah, I don't know.
Okay. What about music?
You know, I wasn't really too much into music back then. You know, like I would like and late at night, I'd have the transistor radio and I'd listen to baseball games on my transistor radio, or by when baseball was on, I'd be listening to Lakers games. So like, you know, like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Magic Johnson, James Worthy, Michael Cooper were great Lakers back then. Jamal Wilkes. So I'd listen to the Laker games, and if that wasn't on, I'd be listening to LA Kings games back then. So, I mean, it was always, I was mainly a sports guy. I wasn't too much into the music,
okay.
In the music scene at all. You know, like I couldn't, tell you a band and their song, the main song anyways back then. You know, I was mostly into sports or wrestling back then, you know.
Okay. Right on. All right. Well, right now I'm going to send you back over to my co-host, Sign Guy.
Okay, Sign Guy.
Thank you, Coach. Well, Mr. Starr, I don't know if you have read it yet, but there's a good book that covers the L.A. Dodgers of that time period called Singled Out, The True Story of Glenn Burke. Commend it if you've not read it yet.
No, I have not read that one. So it's called Singled Out, you said?
Yeah,
Glenn Burke?
Singled Out, The True Story of Glenn Burke.
Okay, I'll read
like
that.
He and Dusty Baker invented the high five, and I believe it was the 1978 playoffs.
That's right. Dusty Baker did invent the high five. That is true. And also, I'm currently just started reading a book, The Penguin, Ron Say. His book just came out on Amazon, and I just bought it, and I just got it, like, this week. I'm going to start reading that, and I'm actually going to meet Ron Say. He did an autograph signing up here in August at a single-A baseball game for Vancouver Canadiens to be here signing autographs. And I got to meet Fernando in May. At an event out of the blue. I was in California, and I saw Fernando was signing, and I go, oh, I got to get my picture taken with Fernando, right? So it was a great time. But, yeah, Dodger Blue.
We've seen over the years a lot of professional wrestling promotions have teamed up with baseball teams to bring wrestling to the baseball stadiums. We see a lot of minor league teams present pro wrestling nights where they'll bring in pro wrestlers for autograph sessions and so forth, and then they'll have a independent card after the game. We've seen baseball stadiums at the major league level used for major events at the national professional wrestling level. What do you think of having pro wrestling at baseball stadiums? Do you think that it's overall a good fit, or do you think that it's more trouble than it's worth for a lot of the wrestling companies and or the baseball teams?
No, I think it's great. I think it's more exposure for especially independent companies to get out there. And usually it's a guaranteed show, so they're going to make some money guaranteed. They don't have to worry about the box office. It's a built-in crowd. And, not everybody sticks around, but a lot of people do, and you might develop some new fans out of that. Some people who didn't even know wrestling was around will be able to find out about the product. Definitely, the ring is easy to set up usually on those events because it's the baseball field is wide open. You can drive right in there, get that ring up really quick, and have a good little show. The only problem is probably the seating, unless there's seats on the field, the close field. People are far away, which is easier for calling a match, I guess, but harder for people to see because they got to look for the netting on the show. Stadium shows are great for local wrestling or independent wrestling, like I said, because it exposes the product to people who haven't seen it before. It's a guaranteed payday. Guaranteed payday is always better than relying on ticket sales or sponsors to make the payday. So, I mean, anytime a promoter gets a guaranteed payday, they like that a lot better.
Now, I know you also are a big hockey fan, and pro wrestling and hockey have had a relationship over the years. A lot of hockey arenas are used for pro wrestling events. Ron Fuller went from professional wrestling to being a minor league hockey owner, so there's connections there. What do you think of the symbiotic relationship between hockey and pro wrestling?
I don't know if there's a symbiotic. I think the relationship is just because the venues are similar, like the same venue for hockey used for wrestling. You know, I mean, when there's no ice in the arena or they cover the ice with boards, right? But yeah, like in, especially in small communities here in Canada, every city has a hockey arena because hockey is Canadian Canada sports. So like they're easy to get for wrestling shows in the summertime or when ice is out. They're perfect. They, you know, they sit empty, so they're a perfect fit for independent wrestling shows to come in and do a quick show. And you know, usually you could work a deal out with the arena where it's either sometimes the arena pays to bring you in. Sometimes the arena will go on a percentage basis with you, like a percentage of the ticket sales. Sometimes the rate will be so low for the rent there because they just want to fill the arena and bring entertainment into the community. So, yeah, hockey arenas are a perfect fit that way for independent wrestling for sure. And for the big-time guys, though, because, you know, 18,000 to 22,000-seat venue is pretty much perfect for, like, the WWE or AEW because they could knock a quarter or a third of it off or a quarter of it off for the TV production and stuff like that and still have a decent-sized crowd there and it looks full, right? So it definitely is a good fit for wrestling all around.
Now, as a promoter, you've helped a lot of people over the years that went on to pretty well-known national careers. Guys like the Bollywood Boys, Bambi Hall had a run on national TV in Canada. There's a lot more than that that you've helped over the years. When you see guys that have worked for you make it to national TV, what is going through your mind as a promoter that used them?
Well, you know, I'm very happy. I'm very proud that I had a small part in their career and making them get there. I mean, like I said before, you know, like they start, like let's say they start with me at wrestling school and they learn the basics from me. And then they start on our shows with ASW or ECCW back in the day. And they start honing their craft, learning better. But then they move on. They go to other places. They go to, you know, they go to other places to be more training, more experience, other places to wrestle. And they groom themselves to get better and learn their craft. So, I definitely feel proud to have a small part in their careers, like Kyle O'Reilly and El Fantasmo and the Bollywood Boys. I mean, I played a small part. But, you know, it takes, at the end of the day, it takes them to make it all the way. There's tons of guys out there that I think they should have had a bigger part in wrestling that didn't make that jump or didn't get that opportunity because they didn't make that opportunity for themselves. You have to hustle. You have to work hard. You got to keep reinventing yourself. You got to keep practicing, keep training, and just keep grinding it out to make it to that next level. It doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen. Some people get the lucky break. Some people don't. But a lot of guys who had the body, you know, the physique, had the talent and the ability – We never made that leap. They never tried to go somewhere else or try to get themselves booked. They always thought, well, maybe these guys will call me. Instead of, like, reality, a wrestler is trying to make it should be just like you're going for a job interview. You should be sending out your resumes, sending out your videos, your promo pictures. You know, you're making contacts. You're networking. They're doing that job as an, you know, getting your name out there because, you know, you never know. Like, some guy might say, oh, we need the East Indian tag team. Who do we know? Well, hey, I met these guys, the Bollywood Boys, and somewhere, you know, let's get them a shot, you know. That's how it works. And if you're not out there networking, making friends, just pestering the offices, just keep sending stuff to the offices. If you're out of sight, you're out of mind. But if you stay there focused in their sight lines, it's a good chance you'll get something if you have the talent too, right? It always takes talent too. But yeah, like I said, there's a lot of guys who missed that opportunity, who should have had the opportunity, who may have been better than the guys that are making it now, but they didn't put the extra work in behind the scenes of getting themselves out there, marketing themselves. You know, that's definitely a big key to wrestling.
One of the places that you have been that has become sort of a hotbed for independent wrestling over the last few years is Alaska. They've really grown as a wrestling community. 907 Pro Wrestling has become a very, very good promotion. They're running a show today in Anchorage.
Oh, wow.
They also have another promotion that uses half locals, half guys from the national scene. So they were thriving up there. What was it like for you going to what was really the beginning stages of Alaskan pro wrestling?
Well, you were there with me, son, guys. So, I mean, it was quite the experience. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I always thought Alaska had a lot of potential. And in fact, I actually thought about myself when I was running ASW in BC here. I thought, man, you know, Alaska's really an untapped market. And I thought of that. I go, maybe I should try to work with somebody up there and just run Alaska myself, you know, and maybe take a crew and try to drive up the back way and go hit the smaller towns in Alaska along the way. Because, you know, we've taken shows as far as BC, which is 1 mile from Hyder, Alaska, right? You can walk across the border to Hyder, Alaska, even at Dease Lake, which is getting close to the Alaskan border too. And up there. And I thought there was Alaska had a lot of potential, and I thought there was a lot of good guys up there. And no, I have followed it a little bit. I noticed that there is a company, bringing a lot of stars in, or has shows of many stars on. I believe it's JT West. JT, which one is JT West involved in?
JT West helps with both. He's the trainer at the 907 Academy. He runs that promotion, and then he also helps out with the other promotion as well.
Yeah, so like he's got a good hand, he's got his hand up in there and stuff. But I noticed, I've been following it just from a distance, you know. Just I see things on Facebook pop up here and there. I didn't know they had a show today, because I actually don't go on my Michelle Starr account very often anymore. I usually, I'm not searching that one as much as my other one, right? But Alaska's definitely a great place to. I think it has a lot of potential to make some money. Where do they run an Anchorage at now?
They are at sort of like a civic center, I believe.
Hmm. Yeah. So they're bigger events, right? Who are they bringing up for this show?
I believe for 907, it's just the Alaska crew.
Hmm. Okay.
But they have a lot of really good guys up there. I know JT West has a couple of sons that are now getting started. So looks to be a growing community up there.
Well, that's great. You know, before, you know, you only had a few local wrestlers, and but as they train more guys and they keep running the school, they'll get more guys up and more guys to choose from them. The more variety of guys choosing to make sort of better shows and stuff, and then they bring in guys from the Washington State and Oregon, and they bring in guys from TNA guys up there and stuff, which only makes the talent up there better. It makes them want to work harder and they'll learn more from these guys, right? So it's definitely a win-win thing. You know, I mean, they were secluded before, but now they seem to have it going up there now, pretty good.
Now the other non-contiguous state is of course Hawaii, and they have a longer, more traditional history in pro wrestling because they had a full-time territory there. But the independent scene there is a little more shaky. They only run sporadic shows, as far as I know, in Hawaii. What do you think wrestling there, and do you see a potential for them to do more, perhaps?
I don't know a lot about the Hawaii promotion. I mean, I did follow back in the day. Like, I remember Polynesian Pro Wrestling when I was a kid. Polynesian Pro Wrestling was learned by Liam Iavia. Used to come to California. They did their ill-fitted California tour. They did the Olympic Auditorium. They did San Jose, California. They did a few other places, and it was awful. I remember going to those shows. I was a kid. I wasn't wrestling yet. I was just breaking the rest. I remember driving Professor Toru Tanaka. He lived in Gardena, California, and he was at the end of it. He was retired at this point, and he wanted to go to the show in San Jose. Was to see Rocky Johnson and a bunch of the other guys he knew or whatever from Hawaii and stuff, right? So I drove in my car, my Ford Maverick, and we drove from Gardena, California to San Jose, California, just to go to the show up there. And it was me and Tanaka and this Samoan named Tao Logo, Tao Logo actually sang had a song. He was called Destroying Samoan back in the day. And he's a California independent Samoan. But, this is quite the story about that's how it ties in Hawaii. But anyways, Hawaii now, I think probably Hawaii, since it's so small, it's just smaller, it probably has a It's probably a venue issue. Probably can't find the proper venues to run, and a venue that probably hasn't been burned by somebody else, maybe, or maybe has to said no to wrestling before. It's not like you go to like Seattle or a big city down here where there's 10 venues to choose from. You know, they probably only have like one venue to pick from, and that one venue may be out overpriced. It may be out of price. It might be a venue that has like weddings and other special events, like corporate events. It might be which those events can afford high rents and high costs, but maybe a wrestling show that draws 200 people or 500 people, or it's probably 200, but can't afford those costs. So that's probably what keeps wrestling down there in Hawaii. Until someone comes into Hawaii that has money and wants to spend money, because it takes money to make money, obviously. So if someone wants to go and spend money and put a lot of money into a show, and then there's a chance it might draw a good crowd, but will they draw a good enough crowd to pay the expenses? You know, because you have to, like Hawaii, like same as Alaska, you have to import talent. You know, I mean, there's probably not a lot of local guys in Hawaii anymore that are still wrestling, and you have to import half the crew, and you know, cheap flights over. And you could probably get to import guys from LA over, right? Because that's probably the cheapest flight over. But yeah, it's probably just too costly to make a go of it at an independent level, unless someone really really takes a bite off it and just jumps in and invests lots of money, right?
Well, at this point, I know Coach has more to ask you, so I will pass things right back over to the coach with the mo.
Very good. Good to talk to you.
All right. So I'm sure he's got a few more questions here later, but we'll see how it goes. Other than that, what are the most memorable matches you've ever seen?
Most memorable match I've seen?
Yes.
You know, I don't know if I can specifically think of one. I mean, but like, are you talking about like on a national level or the independent level?
I'm talking about anywhere on a VHS tape, live, TV, whatever.
Well, you know, I'd have to go back to my childhood, because I remember like being a kid going to the local shows in California, and I remember watching guys' matches that impressed me. What made me really want to be a wrestler is I used to love watching Wild Man Jack Armstrong wrestle against Chief J. Strombo Jr. as a kid in California. I mean, those two tore it up. I mean, for what I knew about wrestling back then, the matches entertaining as hell to me. They worked hard. They got double juice. You know, the matches were a half hour plus. I mean, and I watched these matches in every independent show that I went to for these guys. So I mean, that really sticks in my mind. For myself, getting the team of a legendary wrestler in California called Great Goliath, who was one half of the tag team of Gordman and Goliath. I would team up with Great Goliath in Tijuana, and the Lucha shows. That was a big moment for me back in the day. Like I said before, seeing Bob Backlund versus Sergeant Slaughter at the LA Sports Arena, it was I'm more into the old school type wrestling. Like, I mean, I watch a little bit of wrestling now. Sometimes I'll turn on AEW for a while and watch it, but like it just a lot of it doesn't make sense. Well, wrestling has never made sense, but I'm more into the classic good guy, the babyface versus the heel, and telling a story and really working the emotions of the audience and getting people in there. Like, I love those days of the early 80s, where the people were going crazy for the babyface. You know, if you watch World Class and back in the day in the 80s, you'd see the people go nuts for the Von Erichs, and they'd be working against the Freebirds. And, you know, it was a different era, a different type of wrestling back then, and that's the kind of wrestling I like. I mean, nowadays wrestling's about theatrics and about who could do the coolest move, who could jump off the highest ladder. You know, I just turn that off usually. I mean, it's not doing it for me. I'd rather go back and watch old wrestling. Like yesterday, I was watching Ric Flair versus Terry Gordy from the Dallas Sportatorium, and I didn't watch it all. I had to go somewhere, but I was watching, and they had Billy Jack come out, and Billy Jack was managed by Sunshine back then, and they did the angle where, you know, Billy Jack wanted to face the winner, and Ric Flair and Terry Gordy shaked Billy Jack's hand, yeah, I'll do it. And then Ric Flair wouldn't do it. And Ric Flair said, you know, I've always wanted a piece of sunshine, you know, that thing. And, you know, if Sunshine gives me a kiss or gives me an eye to her, you know, I'll give you the shot type thing. And then Sunshine slaps him in the face after the kiss, you know, and stuff. And the place goes crazy. And then the match starts, and it's like boom, bang, boom, like 100 miles an hour right at the start with, you know, Ric Flair bumping his ass off for Terry Gordy. And it was, you know, that's the kind of stuff I like watching, you know, like that type of wrestling back from the early to mid '80s. You know, I like the Mid Atlantic wrestling with the Crockett's. I like Georgia Championship Wrestling. I like obviously Bill Watts, Mid South Wrestling. I like watching World Class, and I even watched Southwest Wrestling with the Blanchard promotion. So that's the kind of I guess I'm still stuck in the '80s, you know, myself.
Okay. Right? Okay.
Can't get out of it.
All right.
Yeah.
And then before I do the follow-up to that question, let me tell the fans a little insight about your small portion of your career when I got to do a little bit of a tour with you. We're like Canada, Tacoma, where was it, Gig Harbor, Portland, maybe somewhere else, you know what I mean? So it was in a little stretch there. And I won my UIW, my first title at the Gig Harbor High School. I won the UIWA Universal Heavyweight Championship against Lewis Rock and Dave DeBossi when they had Playboy Buddy Rose in their corner, and I had Hank Miller with me. But you wrestled Tony Cazzina that night, and I got the newspaper clipping right here. I want to read the fans. A little controversial. Does the show the UIWA put on, although at some points controversial, receive mixed reviews from a wide range of audience members? Some left shortly after one controversial match featuring Michelle Starr, a male wrestler from an organization in Canada. Starr portrayed a female during the event. I was disappointed in that one match, said the Gig Harbor principal, Mike West. If we do something like this again, we'll have to screen the acts first to make sure they are appropriate. Now, do you remember that one, sir?
I remember that show. I do remember that show. I remember being in Gig Harbor, and I remember, you know, when I did a controversial act in every town, right? So, I mean, there was a lot of times I wasn't – a lot of times guys want to book me at certain shows because they said I was too flamboyant for some shows, right? So I was kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of like, you know, how reading children's stories in the libraries now, right?
Oh, yeah,
controversy,
yeah.
Right? So that's the controversy now, but I was controversial that way back then.
Yeah, and then, hey, think about it, that principal would be canceled today.
That's right, for saying that he would be canceled today, because it's weird how things change. Like, in the next 20 years, things started to change, where my character, like, naturally became a good guy, a babyface, without turning babyface. People supported my choices in life back then, so it was a natural transition. But, like, before that, in the 90s, I was hated, and then people wanted. I had threats against people. People wanted to fight me. People would chant HIV at me. They would chant fag at me,
and,
which is fine. But
they
would chant.
Didn't you have to shut some shows down for riots and shit, or what?
we had shows shut down for riots. I remember the NWF, the National Northeast Wrestling Federation, brought a show out to Clark County Fairgrounds there in Vancouver, Washington. And I was wrestling the Honky Tonk Man, and that made the news that night for the controversial performance. And I think they said they would never have wrestling back after that night, right? Because of my character, and because Honky Tonk incited the fans to chant faggot, right?
Okay.
So yeah, times have changed for sure.
Let's stay on that little tour we're talking about. And I got another town we can say, Hillsboro. So now we're going to Hillsboro. And I get to wrestle you, champion versus champion, UIWA champion versus you were the Pacific Northwest champion, and maybe even two different champions. Now, you're going to remember this day all of a sudden, because that day you showed up right after wrestling Rikishi in Vancouver. Now are you starting to remember?
You know, the same day was the next day.
It was the same day, because you were in the match going, my name is Fatu. My name is Rikishi Fatu. And then here's another thing. My buddy started an incident with you and started talking shit outside the ring. Fat Larry, he just died like a year or two ago, but he called you out, and you jumped out the ring, said you're going to beat his ass. And then he goes, not in front of all these people, you ain't.
That's freaking hilarious, man. I wish my memory was better. I know
okay,
it did happen.
Yeah, of course, I got schooled, but hey, what a great experience.
Yeah, well, thank you, Coach. I mean, wow, that's a long time ago, and I think I only went to Tito's there in Hillsborough a couple times, but sometimes memories don't stay in my head too long, right? So it's part of getting old, you know. You can't quite remember everything. I remember some things stick in my head, you know, and then I might remember, like, let's say, like a couple hours later, go, oh yeah, that's what he's talking about. Yeah, now I remember it. But it's all, you know, getting confrontations with fans at ringside was a common nightly thing for me, right? So I mean, I've had to fight fans at ringside. We've had
goodness,
exchanges like that. You know, I mean, it's definitely it's happened all over. It's because of the back then it was a controversial character, and you know, Oregon's always been a bit about 10 years behind everywhere else. You know, like in accepting things, right? So, but
yeah.
So
yeah, and then hey,
Even my last run in Oregon in 2011-12 for Jeff Manning, the fan, even though I was a good guy in Canada, in Oregon, I was still a heel, because the fans still had to come around to accepting a person of my character, right?
Yeah,
so they,
yeah.
But that just shows you that Oregon was a bit backwards, right? So.
Oh, okay, and then a little bit more insight the fans should know. When you said you had to fight the fans, that the average fan might not realize that you're not the type of guy that would ever want to fight a fan or even ever act like you're tough. So I just want to let people know that.
Yeah, I'm usually a nice guy. You know, I try to be a nice guy, but I mean, I'm a bigger wrestler than most guys nowadays. So I mean, usually the fans will back down, right? You know, so. But,
yeah, you can handle yourself. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
But,
okay. So now the follow-up, what's the most memorable matches you've been in or been involved with?
Uh-huh. Most memorable matches I've been involved with. Gosh. You know, there was one night I was wrestling, and we were wrestling for do you remember Ivan and Jeff Kafori, the Kaforis?
Oh, yeah.
Were you around then when they were running Oregon?
Yeah, yeah.
And I just got done wrestling. We were on a three-day loop, and we were doing a show. I think it was going to be in we were wrestling Idaho that night, possibly for them. And Glenn Denton, the grappler was the booker, right? And I think Jeff Kafori is making up the lineup, you know, the order and stuff like that. And he saw that myself and Juggernaut were to go before him on the card, right? And he said, no. I says, listen, I can't follow Michelle. He says, he gets the people going too hot and stuff like that, and I won't be able to follow their match, right? So let Michelle and let Star and Juggernaut go last, right? And I thought that was one of the greatest compliments I ever got from a wrestler, especially a guy like Len Denton, right? You know, the grappler, because he's been, you know, he was such a famous booker for all the years in Oregon. And for him to put me over like that and say that was really cool. And it stuck with me for a long time, you know, for sure. So, I mean, you know, I still think about that today. You know, I was thinking about the other day, actually, about that, you know, how cool was it to say that, you know. I had a lot of, you know, any match of Matt Bourne was, I thought was a more like, if you wanted a realistic match, more was, or, you know, hard hitting match, you know, that's the guy that, you know, you'd be with in the ring, you know, he'd give you your money's worth, right? And, you know, you have to be ready to perform with Matt, because, you know, Matt, for Matt to sell, you got to hit him hard, and he's going to hit you hard, and it's going to be a bit snug, you know, and it's too bad we lost Matt, you know, I guess it was 10 years ago now, but,
goodness, yeah.
You know, but guys, working guys with him, you know, getting to wrestle in South Korea against the Super Dragon League 1PO in the main event in Seoul and the other towns, right?
Wow.
That was really cool. You know, like I went there first, and I wrestled against the tag match the first time I was there. But the next tour, I was wrestling the main against the boss every tour, right? So every town,
wow.
Every town we went to, I wrestled against the boss, right? If it wasn't me, it was Kirby, right? wrestling the boss, right?
Yeah.
So which was cool that the, you know, of course I'm putting the boss over at the end, but like it was cool that he thought that was good enough to work him. And they were, you know, there's always a language barrier too, you know, like, I mean, you're working against a guy who speaks very little English and I speak very little Korean. And, you know, so you got to plan the match out and hopefully it goes right. But, you know, that was definitely a cool. And then also getting to wrestle great Sasuke and for Michinoku Pro Wrestling in 2003 and Hakushi. Me and Disco, my partner, we got to work them in a tag match, right? So that was cool, the wrestle against Sasuke. And I wrestled Sasuke in his singles, too. I actually got hurt against Sasuke. He was doing one of his dives out of the ring, and I hurt my shoulder halfway into the tour. It was a two-week tour for Michinoku.
Oh.
So, like, it was painful the rest of the tour, just, like, trying to wrestle the rest of the tour there. So that was another Japanese legend. Getting to wrestle against a guy like that was very cool. Gosh, what else? Thinking now. I guess that's pretty much a couple of good ones for sure. You know, for now, you know, getting to wrestle in Cork and Hall in Japan, that was definitely against Tarzan Goto. That was cool. That's definitely a good memory. Tarzan Goto has now passed away too, right now. So I think he passed away last year, but passing away, Mike. What's up with
that? Wow, I know. Goodness, I know. We aren't indestructible, my gosh. All right,
no.
Well, right now, this next segment, brother, is called, it's my job to find somebody who cares. So I'm going to call someone right now, and we're going to see that if he cares. And, of course, he's a big fan of yours, I'm sure. Here we go.
Boy.
It's dialing.
Who we calling? What, I mean, am I gonna know this
okay.
person now?
You know this person, yes. Okay, let me see. Try it again. It didn't work that first time.
Uh-oh.
Come on now. Call failed. It was not answered. Okay. All right. Well, I guess let me text him back and see what we can do there. But anyway, how many different characters have you worked in wrestling?
Well, you know, I started after the territory days really died out. Like, I came to Canada, and it was still a territory wrestling 6 or 7 days a week up there. And we had TV every week and stuff. And then they shut that down. And the early 90s were kind of slow. I started wrestling for Sandy Barr when all the shows he had. And then I wrestled when Sandy stopped working or running shows. I was wrestling with the Kaporis. I wrestled for Schweitzer. I wrestled all the guys independents. I worked Mexico. I worked, like I said, Japan, South Korea, England and Scotland. It was kind of like a time period. My career was kind of like where there wasn't a lot of territories, but there was a lot of independent shows, right? You know, no one's running a lot of shows back in the day. I remember when we were running WCCW, West Coast Wrestling, in 91 and 95, and Sandy Barr was running Championship Wrestling USA. Between the both of us, we keep guys busy pretty steady. Like, we'd have a schedule where he'd run some towns, I'd run some towns. We would share Jimmy Snuka. So Jimmy Snuka would work on top of his shows, on top of my shows. We'd share the cost on Jimmy Snuka. And he's kind of like our headline guy. And a guy like Snuka could get maybe, 5 to 8 bookings a month between the both of us, right? So, I mean, that was a good deal we had back then. Plus, I'd work all those shows, too, obviously, and other guys, too. But that was the early 90s, and wrestling was a part-time weekend thing, you know, some weekdays. Back in the ECCW heyday, we had a lot of shows. We're doing road trips every week. We're doing a road trip somewhere where we go, you know, 2 or 3, 4 days in a row, sometimes a week in a row, different places, you know. And there was even a time period where we ran British Columbia and Washington State at the same time, on the same nights. We'd have a crew in Washington State, and the crew in British Columbia going at the same time. So Dave Republic would run some shows, I'd run the other shows, and if I couldn't do it, Disco Fury would be to do it, or guys like Stu Kemp would help us out, you know, and run the towns, right? So it was, definitely a great time back in the late 90s for sure. Late 90s are busy, 1999, 2000, 2001 was a busy time for sure.
Yes, definitely, and a shout-out to Stuart Kemp, where he's on his way to Canada right now for, like, a small reunion he was talking about. But
that's right.
Without any further ado, I do got the caller on. Hank Miller, how you doing?
Well, you know, I could be doing better, but now that I'm talking to you, I guess I'm doing good.
Thank you.
How you doing, Ghost
Mike? I'm doing good. We got Michelle Starr on today. You've been around the block with him a little bit. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, I heard him talk about the 90s. I think that's when I first met him. I don't know if he remembers me or not, but when I think it was the old Boys and Girls Bingo Hall here in Tacoma with Dave DeBasi, if I remember right. That was the first time I met him. So, yeah, it's been quite some time. I'm surprised I still have a memory sometimes, but, yeah. But, yeah.
Goodness, that's a long time ago.
Yeah,
yes,
that was when,
keep
that's
going.
When Dave was just starting out.
Yes.
Right.
So, for everyone to know, Hank was instrumental in all of Dave's stuff. He was Dave's manager for years before he became my manager as the nice man Hank Miller. And we want to thank you for all you've done for wrestling, brother.
Yeah, I'm kind of retired now. I'm going through, looks like I'm going to have another surgery on my shoulder again. So, you know, it just seems to never end. But, you know, I'm still grateful that I'm somewhat a part of wrestling, you know, in the light where I still talk to you. I just seen Dave last week, you know, and we're all getting a little older and, you know, that's the way it goes. So.
Exactly.
But, yeah.
All right, Hank, we want to say thank you for your time, brother, and we wish you all the luck in the world. How do people get a hold of you?
I'm on on Facebook, not under Hank Miller, but for Henry Miller. And then we have my professional wrestling group, Making Professional Wrestling Greater in the Northwest. So that's another way of getting hold of me. Yeah. So.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
I really enjoy
that. Anyway, I'll let you.
I got you on Facebook. Yeah.
Okay.
We're friends on Facebook. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'm looking at your picture right now. Yeah, there you are. Okay. I'm looking at a picture of you and the coach right now.
Okay, nice. Yeah. Yes, the long time real school army manager right there. Thank you, Hank.
All right, man. Be good and be safe.
All right. See ya.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Hey, Star, I'm having a blast here. I don't know how much time you got left, I'm only halfway through my questions. How are you looking on time?
I got a few more minutes here. Go ahead and keep asking. Let's see what we got here.
Okay. Now, let me see. Did you play sports in high school or growing up?
I played baseball. Played baseball up in not in high school, though. It was right before high school. So I played baseball. I played Little League, and I played basketball and stuff like that, and I played football. So, I mean, I did play sports, yeah, for sure. I wrestled in high school, sorry. I was on my high school wrestling team.
And then what's your other self-defense background besides amateur and pro wrestling?
My other I don't have the other self-defense background.
Okay.
You mean like, yeah.
Okay.
I guess.
All right.
Yeah.
And then let's see. My next segment's called Favorites. I'm sure Sign Guy and the rest of the fans would like to know what your favorite coffee to drink is.
Well, that's the easy one. My favorite coffee to drink is no coffee because I don't drink coffee. I'm not a coffee
drinker. Okay, we get that. We get that like 45% of the time now. People are going more healthy, yes. What's your favorite drink?
What I drink every day is instead of having coffee, I do have caffeine. I have a Rockstar Pure Zero energy drink. The fruit punch flavor is my favorite one. So I am addicted to energy drinks, and I only like Rockstars. I mean, I will drink a Monster if I have to, but Rockstars are my preferred brand. So.
And then what's your favorite concerts you've seen?
Oh, favorite concert? Yeah, geez, I go to a lot of country concerts. You know, I just went to Luke Combs last month. Had bad seats. It wasn't a big stadium. It wasn't a great sound. You know, I mean, so I guess, you know, country's my favorite. Went to Luke Bryan a few years ago. Blake Shelton at the Hollywood Bowl. That was the favorite one I went to. There you go. That was about
okay. Nice.
Five. Yeah. So more of a country.
All right. Let me give you back the sign guy for a minute.
Okay.
Well, gorgeous one. We know that you, as a wrestler, went to a lot of different places, lots of countries. You've seen a lot of different places. Did you have a favorite particular venue where you wrestled?
Favorite particular venue? I guess it'd have to be Corrigan Hall, just because it's the legendary status of it, right? Every major promotion and Japanese star has been in there. Just the history behind it. Like I love historic buildings like that. I got to wrestle the Olympic Auditorium when I first broke in. That's another historic building back in the LA area. So and then also the Portland Sports Arena. Just knowing that there's so much history there, getting to wrestle in the Portland Sports Arena many times at the end there. So I mean, I know it was at the end, but like still got to wrestle there a bunch of times. So those are cool memories for sure. That I can place cool venues I remember wrestling in. The auditorium in Tijuana, the Tijuana Auditorium, that's been a cool place. Like a lot of big shows have gone there. I used to wrestle there every Sunday. We'd go down there and wrestle every Sunday in Tijuana. I think I did it 23 weeks in a row, actually, every Sunday. But that was cool, and lots of big stars. You know, you could go down, I wrestle on Sundays. On Fridays, we did another company wrestle on Fridays. You get to go down and you can see guys like El Hijo dos Santos and Negro Casas and really Lucha Legends wrestle in the same venue, in the same ring. You know, that was really cool, definitely.
Now, as a big history guy, obviously you know that in the territorial days of wrestling, BC was Al Tomko's territory. And a lot of his crew were still active 10, 15 years ago. We had guys like Randy Taylor, Dale Houston, The Frog, so many others that were part of Al Tomko's territory still in the business. I know you interacted with a lot of those guys. What did you think about the Al Tomko territory wrestlers whenever you got the chance to work with them?
The wrestlers of the territory? You asked about the wrestlers?
The wrestlers that came out of Tomko's territory.
Yeah, I mean, some of them became great, good friends of mine, you know, like Randy Taylor, awesome guy, stand-up guy. I love the Pimp. The Pimp went on to wrestle for me after that, you know, as the Trash Man. And he had a great gimmick. Kids loved it. He was the champion up here back in the day. Pimp was always polite, always respectful, always wanted to learn, always hungry for more. I can't say any more great awards than the Pimp, but he's probably one of my favorite guys. I've met a lot of guys who were assholes too that turn out to be assholes. Guys like who were my friends who aren't my friends anymore. We have demons that they just can't control. I don't know how to act in public, you know, and stuff. But another longtime friend of mine is Vern Siebert. I met Vern when I first got here in 1988, and we've been friends ever since. You know, we've gone to Vegas together. We've gone to baseball games together. We've gone to movies. We've done dinners together. Vern's probably one of my closest friends in the All-Star days still. Another guy I can't speak highly of is Vern Siebert. Ole Olsen, he was great. Ole was such a good guy. I had a lot of matches with Ole. Ole ran a lot of shows that day. I worked on a lot of his shows. He kept a lot of guys working too with his Ringside Pro Wrestling Company. It was sad that he was taken away from us so young, because he just started coming back to wrestle again. He took some time off and he was wrestling for me for All Star Wrestling back in before he passed away. And he was back. He was happy. He loved being on the shows. He loved being part of it. He would still go out there and put in a 20-minute match, at a high rate. It was great. So Ole Olsen for sure. Buddy Wayne, another guy that's sad he's gone. He was good. He was always fun to be with back in the day on the road and stuff. And even after All-Star, we went on the road for lots of independent shows together. He got me in with Sandy Barr. So I used to drive down to Everett there, and we get in the car with Buddy, and we go down and work for Sandy and for all his shows. So he's the one who hooked me in there. So it's always like, it's not like I said earlier, you know, like you, It's not always about, like, you know, applying for a job. It's like, sometimes you just, you know, the right person, and that person puts in a word for you, and then you get the spot that way, right? Then it's up to you to keep that spot after that. But, I had a falling out. I had a good 10 or 15 years. Me and Tim Flowers didn't speak or see eye to eye, you know, and because we were running opposition promotions to each other. But Tim and I are good now. We talk once in a while. We see each other once in a while. But neither one of us are involved in wrestling anymore. So, he's a guy that we were a tag team and they all started together. And when we started promoting shows, or when he started promoting shows, we kind of had a falling out. We kind of went our own ways, and then we kind of circled back together through helping mutual people. So that's pretty cool. I mean, otherwise, there's a few guys I don't talk to at all in the All-Star days. In fact, I'm going to see a couple guys tonight, actually. I'm going to see Mike Edwards, the wrestler Stoney Edwards. He was a referee for All-Star. I'm going to see him tonight. And I still talk to a few guys. But for the most part, I miss guys like Ole. I miss Ole Olsen for sure, and this Buddy. And I'd love to see Randy Taylor again. I haven't seen him in a long time. So hopefully I'm going to try to make arrangements to see the pimp soon, while we can still see each other, you know?
Absolutely. I agree 100% on the pimp. And you mentioned Buddy Wayne, and his son Nick is making his AEW debut this coming Wednesday against Shane Strickland. Nick has been in the business since he was roughly 9 years old. He refereed for his dad's matches for a couple of years before getting into the ring as a wrestler himself. He trained under his dad, and then a lot of his dad's students picked up the fall once Buddy passed away and helped Nick along. What do you think of the progression of Nick Wayne at this point in his career, being he's only 18 years old, but has that experience and that skill level that he does?
I think he's destined for stardom. As long as he doesn't get a serious injury, he's going to make it look. I mean, the career he's had so far, you know, getting the rest of her, you know, Game Changer Wrestling, all the other companies he wrestles for now, and he wrestling for these companies while he's still going to high school. I guess he's graduated now, but, like, it's amazing the networking he's done and how he's got himself out there, and now he's got the right people who have put the good word in for him, Darby Allin and stuff, to get in that spot at AEW, and I think it's going to be great for him. I think AEW is the right fit for him, because it's a smaller person's smaller man's company, where the size doesn't matter there. I mean, Nick is pretty tall though, but he'll definitely get a shot there. You know, kind of like some, you know, guys like Hook gets, you know, he's a smaller guy, gets a good shot there. I think Nick's going to do well. I think Nick's got the talent, and, you know, is with Boondog Moretti coaching him from behind the scenes there, because his grandson, I think it's a great fit, and I think he'll do good in AEW. I see nothing but this kid's destined to make it for sure.
I definitely think he will as well. Well, I have to get to a booking I have today, so I'm going to have to jump off here, but I want to wish you the very best, and I will pass things back over to Coach for the remainder.
Hey, where's your booking
right,
today?
All right, thank you. Yes,
I am in Washington for Northwest Pro's 10th anniversary show today.
Oh, it's
right
very
on,
good.
Right.
Nice.
Thanks, Sign.
All right, well, thank you, Coach. I will talk to you soon.
All right, Sign Guy, you guys can check him out on Facebook, YouTube, all the social medias, and of course he does Sign of the Times, and he's on Turnbuckle Turmoil every Friday at 3 and Sundays at 1. Okay, nice.
Wow.
Yes, and like you were saying, big fan of the Dodgers. Yes, I was growing up too. You know, they were Yankee killers a lot of times, you know, and they had a good rivalry with the Yankees, so I was a big fan of all those guys, especially growing up in Tacoma with the Penguin where he was from there.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and so have you met him before?
No, I haven't. No,
I know.
The funny story is he was at CAC 1 year. Like he was actually in Vegas. Him and Steve Garvey were signing at the Gold Coast, and I decided that year that I was going to fly in a day later. And I didn't know they were going to be there, right? It was unadvertised.
You didn't know.
I missed them by a day. And I remember Stuart Kemp got the autograph that day. And he always ribs me about it all the time, about how he got to meet Ron Sain, Steve Garvey, and I didn't, and I missed it, right? So.
Yeah, I still haven't got to meet either one of them yet. And then Garvey, they used to call him Popeye, man, the big old forearms he had.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And then he was the definition of an Iron Man also. My goodness.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure, definitely.
And then, of course, Tommy Lasorda, man, he's legendary.
Yes, 100%, yeah.
You know, and Guy has a legendary Tommy Lasorda story. I guess he was the manager of the Spokane Indians, the AAA Dodgers affiliate. And he used to write into the newspapers. He used to fake the scores and blow up the stats and send them into the newspapers.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Yeah, to get interest for the fans, I guess, something. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right, so now let's see. Who are your favorite people to work?
Favorite people to work? Well, hey, let's see. I guess, you know, I like working against Ole. I like working with Billy Two Eagles. You know, Billy Two Eagles, you know, like, I love working with Chief because the Chief is a good baby face, but, you know, and you get the people going behind him and stuff. So definitely the Chief. I always liked working a good-looking baby face guy, you know, like a guy with a good body that I can play with, you know, like with my character and stuff, right? And I wanted to, excuse me, the people could get behind and stuff like that. I never liked doing like a heel versus heel match or like that. It was always hard. I'd rather work the old school classic babyface as a classic heel type matches, you know. So, I mean, that's my preferred thing, you know, for sure. I mean, I liked working against Roselli and Tyler. I mean, who else I like working with? God. You know, when you ask me the questions, your mind goes blank. Like, who did I like working with? You know, like
okay. Goodness,
back in the
yeah.
day. But just, you know, a young, good-looking babyface wrestler.
I remember your matches. You had a rookie, Matt Farmer, as the Inferno, and you against Roselli and those guys for the tag team titles, and you guys were the champs.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Jeez, wow, Matt Farmer, yeah. Yeah, that's the back of
yeah.
the time. That's right, Matt Farmer, yeah. I think, was he part of our Serbian Liberated Army movement back then? We put him under our mask?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, you took him under your wing for sure. Yes, that was nice.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Matt was a good kid. Matt's a good guy now. Matt's running some big shows now. Holy smokes, Defy
Goodness,
Wrestling.
Yes, look at him. And then, of course, he's involved in the history of wrestling, you know, so that's nice, too.
Yeah, historian, yeah. You've asked a question, you know, he has the answer for sure. So
exactly. Okay, what do you got coming up? Anything besides tonight? You said you're going to the event.
Yeah, tonight we're just doing like an old-time wrestling event, like legends get – not legends, old-time wrestling get together. I invited a bunch of guys who are still alive up here and live up here and just to come down and have dinner together at the bar. So we might try to do this on a semi-regular basis, maybe, you know, a couple times a year, so see if we could build it up. Kind of like that, Florida. They got that Florida Legends Luncheon where they do that every couple months. You know, we might try to do that here in B.C., so, you know, summertime's hard, though, because people, you know, have better plans on the weekend or they can't commit, you know, and stuff like that. But hopefully this will build up. I mean, just get together, say hi, see what people are up to, how people look, how old they look. They look better. They look worse. You know, just have a few laughs, have a few drinks, you know. And then, you know, obviously in a few weeks, we go to CAC in Las Vegas. And I guess I'm going to be part of a seminar there about the Pacific Northwest Wrestling Territory days. Myself and Bobby Bass and a few other guys will be on stage there giving our memories of the territory days back in British Columbia. And so that'd be a good time. And always look forward to going to Vegas to CAC. And I know you do too. And I'm sure we'll see each other there. Are you going this year? Yes, you going?
I'm hoping to. It sort of sucks it's in August, the hottest time. But I definitely want to go.
You know, I actually had it booked for August and I canceled because August was a tough time for me that week with work and I had all so many these other trips I have, and plus 100 plus degrees in Las Vegas is not very enticing to me, And
no.
I know they say you can stay in a casino, but you know the thing is though, you still got to get to the casino. You still got to walk outside sometime, and
You go there for at least an event and to see stuff, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you want to go see other things, and you got to go outside and it's roasting. Oh, I know.
You want to get your money's worth when you're down there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
I think August is a bad time to have. I hope they switch it next year. I hope it goes back to the end of April, right? So.
Exactly. Yeah. Or even September is not as hot at the end of September. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
August.
Yeah. End of September. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And then let me see. Who were some of the toughest opponents you had in wrestling?
Matt Bourne for sure. Definitely, he's up there. You know, I got he's definitely one of the toughest. Billy Tugel's another tough guy. Guys in Japan, you know, getting to wrestle. Those guys in Japan were, you know, they were tougher than nails. Those guys back then. You know, I was lucky. I was well liked by the guys. So I didn't have to like get in lots of shoots. You know, different guys. Jesse Barr is a tough guy for sure. Wrestle against him. You know, wrestling is about really not about how tough you are, it's about how real you can make it look about it being real. You know what I mean? You,
exactly.
You want to be a good worker can make it look real about it being real. And that's actually the secret of pro wrestling. The wrestling every day of the week is actually to make it look good without getting hurt. So,
definitely. Yes, and I got a Billy Two Eagles story. I debuted against Billy Two Eagles in 1996. My goodness, those chops sure wake you up, and you start to think, man, what am I doing here?
Those chops, like, when a new guy would show up at my shows or at the TV tapings or Tomko back in the day, he would, like, take his hand, and initiation was for him to chop the new guy, right?
Okay,
he would
chop the
wall. He would chop the wall first, right?
Oh,
just, like, so
goodness.
Hard. Like, they would just terrify these guys. And he would chop these new guys, and he would leave the biggest wealth of handprint on him, right? I remember when I first met him, they asked to do that to me, and he said, no, I won't do it to Star. So he didn't do it to me.
Okay.
And we worked each other so many times after that, right? Like, so he wouldn't give me the chops like that, right? So, which is cool, you know, so.
That's nice. Okay, cool. And then after the match, not only did he ask me if I had any Poca Loca, which of course I told him hell no. he goes, don't you ever let anybody tell you can't wrestle, because he says I can. So that really meant a lot to me.
That's good. That's awesome.
And then of course,
that's
not
good.
Only was he still one of the most toughest wrestlers, I also got to wrestle Moondog Moretti, and of course he was one of the toughest too. My goodness. Yes,
oh, definitely,
so,
definitely. Moondog, yeah.
Yes. Now, what are your suggestions for people wanting to get into the business?
Don't. No, just.
I know, we get that.
No.
We get that.
No, I mean, you got to go to, you know, I would suggest go to a wrestling school that has a trainer that's actually who's been there, or has lots of connections right now, guy like Bully Ray, or someone of that caliber, you know, Santino Morella, maybe out of Toronto, different guys like that. Gangrel, you know, guys who are still active in the business. Go to get trained by a guy like, I would highly recommend Gangrel. He's very thorough. He's always there with his classes. He doesn't have other people doing the classes for him. He's there 3 days a week, 4 days a week, whatever it may be. He cares about his students. He's still an active wrestler himself. He helps the guys get booked. He's good in the ring himself. So I would go to a guy that has, you got to look at the trainer and make sure the guy that is still active and has the talent or the connections that you need for you to become a star, right? That's what I was looking for.
Okay, right on. And then that was my follow-up. What schools would you suggest? Is there any other schools?
Gangrel's be number one on my list, and Bully Ray's, the 3D Academy, I guess, would be number two. I mean, if you can't afford those ones, I guess, you know, you would go to like a local school. I would go to like Lionsgate here in Vancouver, which is run by Artemis Spencer and Nicole Matthews. They're getting out to quite a bit now. Besides that, you know, I mean, I would learn as much as you can from these places, and I would like learn. Then I'd go to a lucha school and learn lucha style, you know, and try to learn that style too. You have a full,
yeah, that
rounded curriculum, you know.
And that gets you a lot of bookings also, and they have a big following. My goodness.
Yes, for sure. Yeah.
Okay, and then how 100%. Do people get a hold of you? How do people get a hold of you?
Well, you can find me on Facebook as Michelle Starr. You can find me on Twitter as GM Starr, GM Starr. And that's about the way to do it. Yeah, those two ways there. The best ways to get a hold of me, Instagram, Gorgeous Michelle Starr on Instagram. Yeah, contact me.
Man, we appreciate your time and all you've done for wrestling, and I wish you all the luck in the world. And, man, it's just really an honor. And is there anything else you'd like to plug or promote or say to the fans?
Well, you know, Coach, I look forward to seeing you at the CAC, hopefully in Las Vegas. I'm hoping that all young wrestlers should join the CAC, become either a yearly member or a lifetime member. Support the club because the club supports you. I mean, there's been a lot of times where, like, a wrestler, you know, gets ill or needs medical help or, you know, and he can't make his mortgage payments or for some because he can't work anymore, where the CAC steps up and helps these people. It's kind of like the only retirement plan or benefit type thing, or is, you know, safety net that wrestlers have. And it's a club, it's a nonprofit club that's there for the wrestling business and for the support of the older wrestlers who need it. So, and even younger guys and men too, right? So I would say, you know, go
yes,
to see
sure.
CauliflowerAlleyClub.org, join the group and you know, you never regret. You never look back. I'm a lifetime member, and I never look back since I became a lifetime member. And I thought it was one of the best investments ever made. And I think everybody who loves wrestling and who wants to be a wrestler or with a wrestler needs to remember the history of wrestling and those who came before us. And the great way to learn about the history of professional wrestling is to be around the history of professional wrestling. And that's the Cauliflower Alley Club.
Exactly. And, you know, and it's really affordable. I think it's only like $25 a year. So there's really no excuse that, like you said,
that's
everyone
right.
should be involved. And then even the lifetime membership, it was just $300 when I joined a while back. And then the prestige it
yeah.
gives you. And then just like I want to do all I can for wrestling. When I got my lifetime membership there, it's like, bam, checked off. That's taken care of. Now I can move on to other stuff.
Right, definitely. It's great to go once a year
all
and
right.
see old friends. Yeah.
Yes, priceless, definitely priceless. All right, man, we appreciate you so much, brother. Thanks again, and God bless you.
Thanks for having me, Coach. I really appreciate it. It's been a good time.
Yes, Gorgeous Michelle Starr, everybody. Thank you so much. Man, look him up, man. He's got hours and hours of entertaining matches and footage. Yeah, you can't beat Michelle Starr. Man, what a great wrestler and guy that guy is, man. I appreciate having him on today. Nice to have Sign Guy join us. Sign Guy can only join us usually half the time. And then today we're looking forward to the Mariners. They're at the Houston Astros. Mariners are 44-43. They're on a little roll now. Or in July, they're on a roll. And they're going against the Houston Astros, who are 49-40. But this year, we've got their number, it seems like, compared to losing last year in the playoffs against them. So we'll see how that goes. I'm looking forward to today's game. And then, of course, this is All-Star Week in Seattle at T-Mobile Park. There we have an All-Star. We're hosting the All-Star game. So looking forward to that. I'm hoping to go up to the T-Mobile Park's exhibits they got up there with my brother. Looking forward to that. Hopefully get to meet some of my heroes from the Mariners, Edgar Martinez and such. And, yes, we got a good schedule coming up. I got Jim Valley next week, the 15th. On the 22nd, I got Bruiser Joe. And on July 29th, I got a controversial show with Ron Von Hess. I guess he has to air clear the air, he says. You know, man, I've been on so many shows with him, and he's pumped me up so many times on his shows, and I've been waiting to interview him anyway. So we'll see how that goes, and we'll try to keep that one low key as possible. But, yeah, a lot of times his shows get sort of out of hand, but we'll see how it goes. Then, of course, in August, we're already starting bookings. August 26th, I got YT Jones from Alaska there. So, yeah, you guys can check me out at Coach Mike Jones, the coach with the most. Coach Mike Jones on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. Don't forget to check out the Real School Army in the NGW Green Room for hundreds of interviews from celebrities all over the world. And then also, let's check out on July 15th in Ravensdale, Washington, we got the Never Were, who wrote my song, the Coach Mike Jones walk-on song and the theme song for my show. The Never Were are playing July 15th at 2 p.m. at Joe Love's house there. There's a Facebook event already made. I'm looking forward to that. That's looking like it's going to be a blast. I can't wait. And here they are, the Never Were. Thanks, Joe Love. We love you guys, and thanks for all your support, feedback, hope, and questions you guys send in. We appreciate you so much. Thank you so much.
That's right, everybody. You know who it is. Coach Mike Jones on the coach with the most. Coming at you hard from coast to coast. I don't want to boast, but now I got to roast you in my social media posts. You double dose, a diagnose. You feeling tired, life inspired, now you're a ghost. I'll be your host, so won't you raise a toast to the coach with the most, Coach Mike Jones. Everybody say coach, coach. Everybody say-